This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
The 135th edition of Packer and Durham. It's also the two-year anniversary of the concept of this show, which started on SiriusXM, which you can still hear on SiriusXM 371. You also can hear us on the ESPN app live. Get that all over you. Of course, this is ACC Network, despite my partner wearing his alma mater shirt on Elon Day.
Thank you.
Who knew?
Thank you.
All right, we have many different things that we can start with in this hour. We can either go infamous ACC index card.
Well, we teased that.
All right. We also teased this crazy story I got to tell you. Happened to a family member. Or we finish up our business from last night's basketball. I will let you, Mr. Elon, on Elon Day, make the call.
Let's do the two games here real quick at the top. Because I think what happened in Blacksburg last night is just another example of the volatility we had and have in the ACC this year.
Yep.
Here's Clemson coming off a great win against Florida State. Virginia Tech looking just to break the water, right? It's been a real struggle for Mike Young's team.
Lost 9 of 10.
Yep.
Can't make shots. Yesterday we said this game should be pretty simple. If the Hokies make shots, they're in business. If they don't, they're in a lot of trouble.
And Tyrese Radford was sensational. P.J. Horn hit some threes.
They made 12 of them, to be exact. And not only did they make 12 of 26, Wes.
Yeah.
They were accurate. They were good. The second half, they go on a crazy run and blew this thing wide open. And for the first time this year in ACC games, the Hokies finished tonight over 50% shooting.
Yep.
I mean, this team is really good when they make shots. I know that's a unique concept. There's so many teams. In fact, Roy Williams has talked about it. Man, son of a gun, man. When we make shots, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teams that are pretty good when they shoot like this. And Virginia Tech looked good last night. They played well on the defensive end, made a ton of shots. Clemson looked kind of flat. But I think that had a lot to do with what the Hokies were doing.
Tigers backed themselves up a little bit, though, if you want to be honest, in terms of their – bubble of the bubble hopes in the NCAA tournament. And quite frankly, this is another one. I texted you this last night with the boys. This is just another one of those head scratchers for Clemson where they play well at home, but they really fight it when they get on the road.
Yeah. Swept by Virginia Tech, but yet good enough to beat Duke, Louisville, and Florida State at home.
There you go.
And Syracuse and NC State. Yeah, it's crazy.
So take that, for example, as one of the nights in the ACC, one of the games on the night in the ACC. Now let's roll it to Atlanta. And I want to tell you, the question last night was, after the sanctions were announced and all the things happened with Josh Pastner and Georgia Tech, what would we see, Mark, by Georgia Tech? And you know what we saw? We saw a team that wanted to finish strong.
What was motivated to play?
Yes, they were.
Motivated to close.
And
that to me tells me that Josh Pastner has these guys dialed in, and they're playing good basketball. Wes.
They are. And Friday night, 7 o'clock on ESPN2, Jay Alter and Malcolm Huckabee will be at Little John for the Tigers and the Jackets, which should be a pretty interesting show, to be honest with you.
You know, I remember not that long ago we were talking about Georgia Tech and Notre Dame having a hard time winning at home in conference play. Georgia Tech ends it by winning their last six ACC home games.
Congratulations to James Banks. He gets the senior send-off in his final home game. Jackets will close their season Friday night at Clemson. Georgia Tech, by the way, is going to at least break even in the ACC for the first time since 2011.
The flip side, and I got to tell you, this has been the most disappointing team for me, is Pittsburgh. My expectations for them, and I've said this many times, I thought they were good enough to get to the middle tier of the league.
Right.
They finished the season on a 7-game losing streak, and if we had to do a live accounting today, they're 15th.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no question.
I mean, and they're done till the tournament. I mean, you're not going to see another Pitt game till Greensboro next week. But man, a lot of the backcourt's good. I don't know what it is. They just have not played well down the stretch. Really, since the early February, they've been dead last.
Yeah. I want to correct something. I misspoke. Georgia Tech would finish 500. They have a chance to have a winning record for the first time since 2004 in ACC play. It would be the third since 1995 winning record in ACC play. If they lose Friday night, it'll be their best ACC record since 2007.
It's the most ACC wins they've had since the 95-96.
That is correct.
Now, keep in mind, we're playing 20 this year, right. So that could be a little distorted. But nevertheless, despite the sanctions, and we're not going to see Georgia Tech next week in Atlanta,
right.
Josh Pastner and his kids get credit for really playing hard down the stretch, and they've really played well.
Can you say today that regardless of what happens Friday night at Clemson, Georgia Tech's a team you're interested in finding out more about leading into next year?
No doubt.
They're one of those teams.
No doubt.
And Pittsburgh would also be one of those teams, but you don't feel as good about them as you do maybe Georgia Tech.
I had expectations that Pittsburgh was ready to take the next step just right. because I love their backcourt, and they've added some pieces that I thought were going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, there's a disconnect. I don't know what it is, but for them to end the season with seven straight losses and really kind of limping into next week,
yeah.
I just thought Pitt would be ready to take the next step. Maybe it happens for him next season.
All right. Update the index card for America, please.
All right, so, folks, if you don't know what this is, I started doing this 20-some-odd years ago on the old primetime of the Pac-Man show, and it was just nothing more. We were not making a statement. We were not telling you what was going on. It was nothing more than free throw attempts and fouls and foul margins mm-hmm. and all this stuff within ACC games. And we called it the infamous ACC index card.
That's right.
And I would do this on radio and just basically put it on a website where you could say, hey, here's the numbers. Draw your own conclusions. And people would literally lose their minds mm-hmm. when they saw this. So we've kind of done – we've hinted upon this a few times during the show. But as we head into the last weekend of the ACC men's tournament, heading into the men's regular season before the tournament, here is the updated list of the infamous – ACC index card. All right. Now, this is free Jeez. Throw attempt margins only in ACC games. Only in ACC games. Now, I'm not going to tell you up from down, left from right, but Miami's gone to the line. The way you read this is that Miami has gone to the free throw line 71 more times than the 19 ACC teams that they've played. Pitt 66, Syracuse 58. You go right down the list.
Right.
15th is NC State. NC State fans have watched ACC opponents attempt 110 more free throws than their boys. That's how that works.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not telling you anything in terms of style of play, who the officials are. Those are just the numbers.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
Free throw attempt margin. Miami at the top, NC State at the bottom.
Okay.
Anything jump out at you there?
Well, that Miami and Pittsburgh are toward the bottom of the league, and yet are plus 71 and plus 66, and the league leader is minus 42. I mean, I also think this has to do with the foul differential you talk about, too.
Well, that's coming up next.
Okay.
Right. So we're going to give you a free throw.
I'm always fascinated who's high. Like, oh, there you go.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's,
that's why Miami's number one.
There it is. So there it is. That's the free throw attempt margin. And now the foul margin. Now, a negative is good, right?
Yes.
It's the opposite of the free throw attempt. You want to be
right.
a positive in free throw attempt. You want to be a negative in foul margin. There's Miami again at the very top. Jim Larrañaga's guys, 48 less fouls.
He knew this, by the way.
Well, we had him on the show. And we asked him point blank. And he answered Duke and with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
The answer was no. And Mike Bray, always talking about officials, cost him $20K. Oh, they're number two. The Irish are number two. They've been called for 41 less fouls than their 19 ACC opponents. So, again, I'm not pointing the fingers at anybody. Those are the numbers. That is the infamous ACC index card.
Well done.
All right. And I guarantee you people, hey, man, y'all need to keep that on the screen a little longer. Where can they get those numbers? Well, there they are.
You do the hard work that ends up on the sheet
right there.
Here.
There it is.
I mean, look at the sheets.
Eight pages.
We got
nonsense.
The whole sheets. We got all the notes. I'm tearing it up. Look at all this. I mean, come on. This man's hard work with a pencil and an eraser.
That's all. I don't need an eraser.
Calculator.
My math is good.
All right.
You want a story?
I think I agree with the Lumberjacks that we probably ought to hear this story now.
All right. This happened to a family member yesterday, the Packer family.
Everybody okay?
Everybody's okay. Good.
All right.
It's got nothing to do with Kershaw, the snake. We're still looking for Kershaw. So yesterday during off campus on Sirius XM 84, I get a text from my daughter, Emerson. And the text is, you're not going to believe what happened. Now, you're talking about a great tease for radio or television, right? You're not going to believe what happened.
Right.
So, you know, I'm talking to people around the country, and I can't respond to it. I'm not going to multitask like that because I'm also doing other things. So during the break, I write back what happened. Now, my daughter Emerson, and by the way, this football right here, she does because she's an art major, right? Mm-hmm. The shoe, we talked about the ceramic shoe.
The bronze football.
She is in art class yesterday. So I write back, I said, what happened? And she goes, Dad, I'm in art class, and you're not going to believe what happened. I said, well, you know, I got 2 minutes, so I'm back on the air. What happened? She goes, well, we're doing this sketch class, and we have an all-nude model. And I said, what did she look like? And she goes, Dad, it was not a she, it was a he. And I said, all right, whatever. So you got a nude model. I said, is that it? I mean, is that the shock value? Because I'm thinking, come on. I mean, I'm busy. I know you're busy. She goes, No, Dad. You don't seem to understand. Something happened to the nude model. And I got like 8,000 things flying through my head. All right.
I said, so do I.
All right. So I say to her, Emerson, what happened with the nude model? And she says, well, this was his first time in our class, and he passes out. The nude model is up on a podium and passes out and is caught by the art teacher.
I'm going to pull a naked boy.
And so I say,
I'd love to see the lumberjack's face at this point.
I say, well, I'm sure that was quite an angle for you guys to start working on. And she goes, Dad, he fell face first, like splat, until the dude catches him at the last second. Nude model. Male nude model. That's the world I live in right there. I got Kershaw back here. I got passed out nude models with my out-of-state tuition money down here at Clemson. I got Mrs. P mad at me because all I want for dinner are some baked beans and a hot dog.
Again, can I go live to the Lumberjacks on this?
And the only ones that really care are my two dogs who are down here with me doing the radio show.
Can I just say this real quick?
What? Yes, it did hurt when I passed out. I mean, it's 2020. Where are the pictures?
Oh, I wanted no part of that, my man.
I have, you know.
You're not going to believe what happened.
Here's the thing.
Did you believe it?
You people that follow this show, our loyal viewers, listeners, podcast subscribers, people that want to meet Pac, that want to meet the Lumberjacks, you know, Drew will be there tomorrow for all the people that want to meet one half of the Lumberjacks. Josh will be there next week.
Drew's going to be there.
You people need to understand. The first question you always ask, where's Chester and Fuller? Well, they're not coming. But it's these stories right here that this man offers you that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Let's hope not. Oh, poor Emmy.
Poor Emmy?
Well, are you concerned about the model? Forget the model.
Josh, you look better. You okay?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. A couple bumps and bruises. I'm sure Emmy depicted them well on her sketch.
Yeah. Okay, Deportes.
What was Mrs.
Out?
P's reaction to
what
the story?
What was Mrs. P's reaction?
Is everybody okay? My saint of a wife is worried about making sure everybody's okay.
She's such an unbelievable person.
I said, how about the mental scar of your daughter? Well, Emerson, forget the male model who just passed out. He can't handle the pressure. But my daughter, out of state tuition, having to put up with that guy stark naked on the floor. You gotta draw that guy. Come on. How about the teacher coming to the rescue? You know what I'd have done? I'd have been like, I got you.
I want that picture right there.
Oh,
guy hit the ground.
Somebody call Redfern. I think he's injured. That's what I'd have done.
No other show, folks.
Yesterday we got Elliot Avent talking about attacking a snake with an umbrella. Today,
wow.
Nude model.
Yeah.
Male.
Yeah.
Passing out on top of the podium.
You betcha.
Clemson art class.
Life
is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where, what other show is going to deliver that kind of entertainment value?
None. No.
Not that I know
we
of.
We got it right here for you, don't we?
And this is going to be repeated, or do we get interrupted by women's basketball today? How's that work? We get a double dose today?
No replay today on the show. Oh. We got other sports to show. Yesterday was baseball.
We're going to get to that. I have a note about that, too.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
It is our two-year anniversary of the start of whatever this is.
Shout out to Sam and Shane, right?
Yeah, they were part of our family when we got started with SiriusXM.
They put up with a lot of junk.
Yeah, they really did.
Maz, Olivia, give them a shout out.
Yeah, well. No doubt. They still are putting up
with you. They're putting up with you on a regular basis.
That would be true.
Yeah.
That would be true.
So,
all right, we got a little phone call. You want to go there?
Sure. Let's go, Michael in North Carolina. Michael, how are you this morning?
Well, happy anniversary, guys.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Good.
My main
good.
Question is, I know all the guys have got one basically game left of the regular season before next week.
Except Pittsburgh, they're happened, done. Yeah.
But since what happened yesterday and the outcome of what everybody knew that Georgia Tech was going to be out of the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament, what is going to happen with the ACC tournament next week? Is everybody just going to be bumped up at one spot? And if that's true, how is that going to affect, like, who do you think is going to be the sleeper in the blob?
Well, first of all, we've got no chance of telling you the bracket other than the top four at this point. We can tell you who 1-4 is going to be, but 5-14 is kind of still in play because of all the games this week.
We can tell you that if Syracuse wins this weekend, they will be fifth.
Yeah, they'll be fifth. That's the one thing you do know. And then Carolina is locked into Tuesday, and so is Pittsburgh, I believe, this morning.
Yes. We know this. And we're just going to tell you stuff that we absolutely know. We know who the four teams are. They're going to get the double bye. We know that if Syracuse wins their last game, they'll be fifth. Mm-hmm. We also know that on Tuesday, instead of three games with Georgia Tech in it, now that the Jackets are out,
right,
there are only two games.
That's right.
That's what we know.
And the thing that I was asked yesterday on social media is, so 11 plays 14, 12 plays 13. The 11-14 game is at 7 o'clock. 12-13 is at 4:30. Both those games, by the way, will be here on ACC Network. Whoever finishes 10th will move up. They'll move into Wednesday. They will not play, as opposed to playing the 15, which is what would have happened had we done that on Tuesday. The rest of this will be sprinkled out once the final part of the regular season is over, and then the tiebreakers will ensue. And I was making a couple notes after last night that if Boston College and Virginia Tech end up in a tiebreaker, I believe BC would win that tiebreaker.
They swept Virginia Tech.
Right. They would win the tiebreaker because of the sweep.
Yeah. And the other sweep that we know of, which is really the most important one, is Florida State and Louisville.
Yes.
Because that's at the very top of the league.
Yeah.
You're going to have to wait till Friday and Saturday. You could crystal ball and play the what-if game until it actually hurts your head.
True.
But what we told you, or what we absolutely positively know, we know who the four teams are with the double bye. We know heading into the weekend, if Syracuse wins, they're fifth. Mm-hmm. We know there's only two games on Tuesday, and everything else, good luck.
Yeah, there was actually Ed Harden of the Greensboro paper in North Carolina had put together a formula going into last night that there was a way Carolina could have gotten out of Tuesday, but Virginia Tech had to lose all sorts of different little differentials. And it involved Carolina obviously winning Saturday night in Durham as well. So that's all by the boards now, and Carolina will play Tuesday. There is a comparison involving the Tar Heels that I want to share with you about Florida State.
For this year's team?
For this year's Florida State team and the 2011 Carolina team. Because they're both headed down a potential similar path here.
Well, Florida State doesn't hope so, because I don't remember the 2011 North Carolina team winning the national championship.
That's correct. But they did win the ACC's regular season.
Which Florida State has never done.
Right. But Carolina won the ACC's regular season and did not have a first-team All-ACC player.
Again, team basketball.
I understand. I understand. Carolina went 14-2 in 2011. Florida State has a chance to be the first team since that 11 Carolina team who, by the way, lost to Kentucky in Newark, New Jersey in the Elite Eight. You see the numbers, kind of the point differential, points per game leader, which I think speaks to your point a moment ago about
Florida State is the ultimate team here. I'm telling you, they hit you with waves. It's not one guy that leads them every night. That's what makes them so dangerous. Yep. On any given night, anybody can step up, go double figures, and beat you.
Yeah. First team All-ACC in 2011 was Nolan Smith and Kyle Singler of Duke, Malcolm Delaney of Virginia Tech, Jordan Williams of Maryland, and Reggie Jackson of Boston College. The second team featured three Carolina guys in the first three slots. Tyler Zeller, John Henson, and Harrison Barnes with Amon Shumpert. And you remember Jeff Allen, who played for Greenberg at Virginia Tech? He was on the second team as well. I bring all that up to tell you, Mark's hit it, team basketball. It's what makes Florida State unique to this league. And obviously their calling card is defense. It's Carolina's was scoring and the way they played at 94 feet for Coach Williams. But there's a split vote. I think Devin Vassell and Trent Forrest are going to split a lot of votes on the first team ballot.
I think you're right.
And what happens when you get two guys splitting votes is that oftentimes the way the ACC now, the systems and, you know, it's kind of changed the voting, that kind of deal recently. But the way it changes, you couldn't see a first team that does not have a Florida State player on it. That would not be an indictment against how good they are. That would just be about how good a team they are, to be honest, that they don't have a pronounced star. And I think that's important to remember going to Greensboro.
Let me give you a crazy what if here. Again, we're kind of playing what if because we don't know who the first team is going to be.
We'll announce it Monday, 9 a.m.
Okay. We are?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
This program.
That makes my point, I'm getting ready to say, even more important.
Okay.
It's the best thing ever, ever, for Leonard Hamilton and Florida State if, again, the biggest word in sports, if Florida State does not have a first-team member. You know why? Because if it turns out Florida State's the number one seed, if they're the number one seed, and you and I are sitting here at 9 a.m. on Monday going, hey, the first-team OACC players are A, B, C, D, E, F, and not one of them is a Florida State player.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Leonard Hamilton's going to do behind closed doors down there in Tallahassee? Hey, boys, we just played a 20-game regular season schedule in the league. We are number one. We are going to Greensboro as the target. And you know what all these media guys did? Not a single guy in this locker room is first-team OACC. And we're first. You guys ready to go play? Let's go. And if you don't think Leonard Hamilton wouldn't use that in a millisecond,
sure
you don't know anything about basketball.
Sure he would.
I think it would be the best thing ever for Florida State heading into next week if they get shunned on first-team OACC. It doesn't guarantee them cutting down the nets in Greensboro.
Right.
But what it does do is for a team that's incredibly talented and deep and has that DNA, it gives you that little – you always look for edges when championship time comes up.
Right.
Right? Always. I don't know of a team worth their salt that doesn't look for an edge. Coaches are always looking for edges. And something as subtle as that, you can look at every one of those players at Florida State's locker room and say, you know what? Not one of you, first team on ECC. Let's go to Greensboro and show them what we do.
Real quick, I know you're...
You agree or disagree with that?
No, I totally agree with you. I think it's certainly a point of motivation for his team if they need it. I'm not sure they need it. I think they're locked and loaded and focused, number one. I mean, when I saw him a couple weeks ago in Raleigh, it was about the double bye and potentially winning the regular season.
Yeah, but that was that finish line.
Yeah.
We're past that now.
Mm-hmm.
We're to the next stage of, all right, it's go time, man. It's March.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I think they're going to be fascinating next week for a lot of reasons.
It'll be tough out, period.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
It is our second anniversary. We'll keep emphasizing that.
In hopes that we get an extension.
And people are worried about the nude male model. Is he okay?
No. Seriously.
Excuse me?
Come on.
Worried about the
people not worried about that, are they?
I would hope.
It's Elon Day. Can't worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what we can worry about. Day two. The ACC Women's Tournament after number 13, 14, 15 all said, thank you very much. We will move on to the next round.
The People's Choice, Monica McNutt, joins us live from Bristol this morning.
Good morning, guys. I just want to know, did I hear you say you're getting into nude male modeling? Is that what I heard?
There's not enough money. Michael Bloomberg does not have enough money to put me in that position. I am told a story about 20 minutes ago that my daughter is taking, she's an art major at Clemson. And yesterday she sent me a text during the radio show. She goes, you're not going to believe what happened. As long story made short, they had a male nude model for their sketch class. And he's up on a podium and he ends up passing out and falls off the podium. And the professor has to catch him before he goes face first. So that's what happened yesterday in class.
Oh, okay. Proteins are important for modeling as well.
Proteins are important for modeling.
Okay. So with all that said, if that wasn't crazy enough, how about 13, 14, and 15 going, check, we play again tomorrow, meeting today. How crazy was that yesterday?
Come on, right?
You love to see it. I mean, the first day of the tournament in Greensboro, I'd be lying if I said I was not surprised a bit, but when you think of what we've seen all season long on the women's side in the ACC, I can't say that I'm shocked. Pitt and Notre Dame is one that's a little bit deceiving. I actually called the game when Pitt rolled into town to face Notre Dame at home. Mm-hmm. The Irish play a little bit better at home, but their struggles this year have been well documented. But Dashanette Harris, who went off last night for 20 points and hit the game runner, is among four freshmen that Lance White has on that squad that he says really are playing with reckless abandon and just salivating at the opportunity to grow and learn and to get better. And so I'm excited to see what Pitt could do against a Georgia Tech team that has been inconsistent at points this season. So that one wasn't super, super crazy to me. I will admit, I was surprised by the Clemson Tigers being able to handle Miami so candidly. Help me with those words, guys.
You're being candid about how handily they handled them.
There you go, handily. I thought that Beatrice Mompremier would be an X factor. In fact, I said on our ACC programming that her back in the lineup immediately made Miami an X factor. This was a kid that put up 16 and 12 rebounds last year. In this particular game, though, Coach Butler, Kobe Thornton, Amari Robinson locked in, and they would have nothing of it. So I just wonder, you know, maybe Miami hadn't had enough time to play with that rotation. And then last year, you think about last year's Clemson team. Granted, they had all those upperclassmen at the guard position, but Amanda Butler has not changed. And I think she is one of the most competitive coaches in the ACC. And it oozed out into her team, a sense of urgency from Kobe Thornton. Boom, Clemson moves on.
Hey, Monica, you know what? You know, I know you and Kelly were having fun last night. You love having fun with Kelly and giving her grief about the Clemson Tigers. But, you know, people have to understand something. You got the Clemson purple on the nails. You got the Clemson purple on the nails.
Kelly's going to love this moment. She's going to love this moment. It is a good color. It's flattering. I also happen to enjoy their orange as well.
There you go. All right. Now, if we're going to talk about Pittsburgh and we're going to talk about Clemson, we have to talk about the way, I guess, Carolina started and faded. And then Jen Hoover in Wake Forest posting a really nice win yesterday to kind of push them along to meet another team that's had a surprising year and a much improved team in Virginia Tech later today, right?
So this is an intriguing matchup. Ivana Raza had a terrific game last year. Gina Conti doesn't get enough credit in the ACC for what she does at that point guard position. In the Pack, they just came to play. Now, they're similar to North Carolina in that neither team has a ton of depth. And obviously, if you've got a short bench, it burns you the most when it gets to conference play because you're turning around and you're playing a fresh team in Virginia Tech. Elizabeth Kitley, fresh off of a Rookie of the Year award. Her Raza mixes it up. It's more their modern stretch four deal. But Kitley, Taja Cole is another one who at points led the ACC in assists. Dara Mabry and Asia Shepherd, who's gone off for 30 points more than once this season. I like this Virginia Tech squad so much. In fact, I would have given Kenny Brooks a vote for Coach of the Year in terms of the progress that they've made. Wake Forest, Jen Hoover and company definitely got their work cut out for them. I kind of think the ride probably stops here for those guys.
Do you think the ride continues for anybody who's got a 14 or a 15 beside their
name?
Yeah,
what about those two?
So if I had to pick, I think it's Pittsburgh that has a chance. And now, Nell on Wheels, if you're listening, I love you, girl. You know you're my girl. However.
Taking care of everybody. Monica takes care of everybody. I like you, but I don't like you. Right?
I gotta come with the truth this morning, guys. The Yellow Jackets have been inconsistent. At one point this season, I'm whispered that they were locked out of the locker room because coach was not having it. I just think Pitt is a team that honestly has absolutely nothing to lose. Rita Igbokwe did not have a tremendous game yesterday. I think she only put up 5 points, but her ability to cause, folks attacking the rim to adjust in the paint is tremendous. She stands at 6'3". She wants to block shots. Sometimes she gets a little overzealous and hits him with that little volleyball move, which would be over the net, and she winds up in foul trouble. But Amber Brown is another one who's kind of undersized at that four position but plays with so much heart. I think Pitt has had to deal with various injuries this season, and granted, this was not their year. Coach White would tell you that. But they're not too far out to me from being a team that could really shake some things up in this conference. Lance White also has the pedigree. He coached alongside Sue Semerau for years. Obviously, Nell also has a pedigree. But if I had to pick of these matchups, I think Pitt has the best shot of keeping it rolling.
You know, we've not talked about Virginia or Syracuse. I mean, all these teams, we've seen everybody with a double digit pull the upset yesterday. But we do get Syracuse and Virginia in that 8-9 game. What do you like there?
All right, so Syracuse, they faltered down the stretch in the regular season, but I had actually picked Syracuse as my team most likely to get hot down the stretch. I hate to use that phrase again. Syracuse is such a streaky team, but I think when you look back, not too far removed from a Final Four appearance, and Coach Quentin Hillsman is still at the helm for that team. What's my girl? Kiera Lewis has been tremendous for this team all season. If Gabby Cooper can get going, she's great. Emily Inksler rebounding off of that backside. And I think when they are connected truly and playing that 2-3 zone as if they're all tied on a string, they really wreak havoc on teams. But that means that they're getting in and they're closing that middle as an option. If they allow Jocelyn Willoughby to get into the middle of the zone, it's a wrap. Like, it's just straight up a wrap. Now, Syracuse does have a taste for the dramatics. They've got players like Strautmanet and Lewis who have hit big-time baskets at timely moments. So it wouldn't shock me if this game goes to overtime. But I'm leaning, guys, just slightly towards Syracuse. I just think they've got a little bit more experience in big-time games.
Hey, Monica, when we watched this tournament this year, and we talked about this earlier as it relates to the men's card next week, when you watch the ACC tournament this year in women's basketball, I get the feeling it's a little similar to the men in that the league next year will be a lot better because of all the young kids playing this year. In the men's side, I know that's true. You think that holds true for women as well?
I do. I do think that that's true, but I also think it's going to look a little bit different because we've got teams that are going to lose some key seniors. You look at the NC State squad. As much as we love Elisa Kunane, she can't create for herself. Their lead point guard, and Ace Koenig, is going to be graduating. You look at Syracuse. Kiera Lewis is a junior. Gabby Cooper is a senior. I think Emily Inksler is a junior as well. So they kind of return a few. And then you got to talk about this Louisville squad. Dana Evans, who's having a great year, but that team could potentially look very different. Now, Jeff Walls is ready to reload with his recruiting class. But I think the teams that you're looking at to take the biggest jump because so much youth was on the floor this year is obviously a squad like Notre Dame, led by Caitlin Gilbert, who had a terrific year, Sam Brunel, who also had a terrific year. And then you've got, I did mention NC State, but you got Jada Boyd and Jakia Brown-Turner. Virginia will be one that'll be interesting to watch. Virginia Tech, Kitley's a freshman, obviously, so she's one to watch. Taja Cole is going to be someone who's going to be missed very much by Kenny Brooks' squad. Next year, I would not be surprised to see the same level of mayhem, but maybe some teams returning to form.
Okay.
Monica, at the end of the day, Louisville goes into this tournament as the number one seed. We've talked about how the one seed has really dominated the women's tournament here recently, seven straight years. The one has won 24 times overall. Has anything changed at the end of the regular season? Of course, we had mayhem yesterday, but Louisville is going to be healthy. Obviously, everybody with that double bye enjoys watching this, you know, put their feet up and all that good stuff. It still goes through, though, Louisville, doesn't it, in this tournament?
Here's the deal. I actually think this is the year where that may not hold true.
Uh-oh.
When you dig into the ones, a lot of it was the Notre Dame team that was head and shoulders kind of ahead of the pack, or even the Louisville team that was head and shoulders over the pack. That's not the case this year. I think we've seen some tremendous X's and O's down the stretch as well. Our coaches in the ACC are fantastic. For me, gosh, this TV thing that got you on record saying things, man, I have said... I have said that I kind of think it's Duke's year. I think Duke looks really, really good. Haley Gorecki was a close second for player of the year. Liana Odom clicking makes a big difference on that squad. I think Kyra Lambert is underrated, not just because she allows Gorecki to play off ball a little bit, but when Kyra Lambert is energized at the top of those switching defense that Coach P likes to run, she's deflecting ball, she's getting into passing lanes, she's tipping the rock. And then Jade Williams is really coming along and plays within herself and very steady for them at the post position. I love Louisville. I think Jasmine Jones plays with a ton of energy. Dana Evans obviously has had a terrific year. Kylie Shook, your defensive player of the year. However, If there was a year that one doesn't quite mean what it has meant in the past, I think this will be it. And I, that is not a knock to Louisville at all if they don't clinch it. I just think that speaks to particularly the top four teams, really three depending on which NC State shows up, speaks to the competitive nature.
All right, so you're picking against Louisville, the number one seed Louisville, yeah, while wearing a Duke sweatshirt.
You guys made it personal. I'm
that's
not picking against
Louisville. That's a Duke sweatshirt,
I'm
by the way.
I'm picking against... history.
That's a Duke
what?
Sweatshirt.
Don't do that. Don't do that, Wes. Don't do that. This is a very generic ESPN sweatshirt.
I started it. Come on now. Okay, it's a Georgetown sweatshirt. What am I talking about? I'm wearing my Elon shirt today because it's Elon.
There you go.
You better understand who's writing a check around here in the Atlantic Coast Conference, both of you.
Hey, by the way, Joanne McCallie on this show tomorrow morning live from the Coliseum.
That's going to be a fantastic conversation. Definitely ask her what was sort of the turning point besides health. Her team had to get healthy, and that made a huge difference.
There you go. Hey, safe travels. See you in G-Boro.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it.
All right. Monica McNutt, part of the Nothing But Net show that will be at the ACC Women's Basketball Tournament in Greensboro tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Eastern. Kelly Gramlich will be there. Kelsey Riggs will be there. Elena Beard will be there. It's a... commence our festival tomorrow night at 10 o'clock.
We promise to clean up afterwards because we'll be done at 10 a.m.
Yeah, we'll be done at 10. They come on at 10.
Take care of business.
12-hour window. I like our chances, right?
Yep.
All right.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Jordan Cornette's coming up here in about 15 minutes. John Mooney scheduled to join us around 9:30 this morning. Played last night another double-double, his 25th of the year, but by the way, leads the NCAA.
What kind of jersey do you think Cornette's in today?
Don't know.
Blackhawks last week. Maybe like Chicago Bears, Doug Atkins jersey or something like that today.
No.
Mike Singleton.
We're going to find out, though, in about 12 minutes.
Yeah, we'll visit with him. Plenty to go here. Good show. By the way, Monica McNutt, fantastic.
Funny, she, right?
Nothing
she's
but
good.
Nettle, folks. Okay.
Oh, what a crazy day in Greensboro yesterday. That was nuts. 13, 14, 15 seeds all win in advance.
Last night, out of nowhere, Joe Lunardi started prospecting a little bit on the bubble. And
that's what he does, isn't it?
Yeah, bracketology. Absolutely.
I mean, you know, really the next 10 days are – kind of important.
Sure.
If you want to give me who's on the 8 line in June, I don't really care.
Well,
but now you got to know what you're doing.
Well, let me ask you about this comment here. We're going to play, we got the tape here. And here's Joe Lunardi last night talking about the various leagues and the way they kind of fit with one another.
Now, we've got the ACC. It has shifted now in the last week, going from 5 teams to 4 teams. Where does NC State stand as that potentially 15th?
Well, they have some excellent wins, 5 in the first quadrant, as we know. But the real issue for NC State or any potential at-large from the middle of the ACC is the coattails of the conference simply aren't as long or deep as we're accustomed to seeing. This has not been a great year in the middle of the league. Very few of them performed well outside of the conference, and we've had separation and an inability of most to beat the teams, at least in that top three. And you know, it's one of those things. We've seen it happen periodically in other power conferences. It's just a rarity in the ACC. But certainly the Big Ten, the Big East, even the Pac-12 are, it looks like for now, going to benefit from that.
All right.
I agree with that.
It's addressing the glob, obviously, the middle of the league. We're talking about Syracuse, Notre Dame, Clemson, NC State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't have an issue with the relationship, and we touched on this last week, about the Big Ten, because the Big Ten's very good.
Well, before you go crazy here, I've asked people to do this for years.
Okay.
Today, during the commercial break. Just go get a list of all the standings, and you've got 2 minutes to put a check mark beside every team you think is going to make the tournament.
Okay.
Now, don't count. Like, that's one, there's two, three, four. Just check. Okay, yeah, check. When you're done doing it, go up and add them all up.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be amazed to go, oh, my God, I got to find 12 more teams.
Right.
It's unbelievable. It's hard to find 68. So when you give me an ACC, for argument's sake, that is only going to provide four, maybe five. No more than that.
Five is the ceiling.
Five is without question right now the ceiling. But you got four, you know, and normally you're going to get eight or nine from this league. That's five spots somewhere else that somebody's got to accumulate.
Sure.
Big Ten's having a great year. Mm-hmm. Upper half of the Big East is out of sight. Pac-12 for them is having a better than average year. You got to find teams somewhere. So I think what Joe is trying to say, whether he said it exactly right, is while the ACC is not going to give you eight or nine like we're accustomed to, because the middle, the Notre Dames, the Clemsons, you know, the Georgia Tech is not available now, NC State, they've not been able to kind of validate to justify a five or a six spot. You know, those numbers right there don't lie. The teams have to come from somewhere, Wes. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find 68. It really is. I think he's right that other leagues have and will benefit from the ACC not going eight or nine deep this particular year.
But here's the one that caught me by surprise. The middle of the glop. Now, the part I agree with his statement about the ACC is this, and we've talked about this since December, early January for sure. The ACC's non-conference November, December marks are not great. I mean, you look at Notre Dame, their best non-conference win is UCLA. Okay. I mean, they don't really have one you can hang your hat on.
Notre Dame does not have a win against an AP-ranked team.
Okay.
They've lost 21 straight to ranked teams.
But is one affecting, in other words, are the five middle of the road, Syracuse, let's throw Georgia Tech in for this discussion, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Clemson, NC State, because of where they all are in their resumes, the fact that they're 10-9, 9-10, 500 in the new 20-game schedule, mean that they're going to be kept out of the NCAA tournament because in the case of Clemson, they got three wins against the top 10, but they also have head-scratching losses, right?
I.e. last night.
Correct.
Clemson has as many ranked wins as all those teams you mentioned combined.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that those net numbers that you just saw,
right,
in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, that's not going to get you in the tournament. It's not going to get you in the tournament. So, I mean, I think we've kind of reached the point. We've now watched 19 ACC conference games for everybody. Pitt's played 20. You mentioned the non-conference slate, which doesn't have a lot of great W's. Has some, but not, I mean, NC State's is Wisconsin. Wisconsin's
there's
on
not an all-star order of non-conference.
No,
wins.
I mean,
and there has been in years.
In this league, let's be honest. I mean, we are accustomed to ACC basketball going, hey, you want to see who we got this year? Here's a list longer than my arm,
right,
of top 25 wins. This particular year has not been the case. And you know, I still contend that next year this conference is going to be out of sight like it normally is. But this year the league, to me, mm-hmm, has four teams that are certainly good enough to get to Atlanta and compete for a national championship. Now, whether they do, they'll have a chance to prove it. But everybody else has given you a spike. I mean, I've seen NC State destroy Duke, and you go, boy, that is a good-looking team.
Right.
I've also seen NC State lay an egg, and you go, who are these dudes? Mm-hmm. Every one of those teams, Clemson, Syracuse, go right down the list. They've just not been consistent enough. And really, we've kind of talked about, hey, can we get five into the dance? Nobody's been able to be consistent here in the last 3 weeks to take care of business. Clemson's given us incredible spikes. I mean, those three wins at home were out of sight. But then you look big picture, and it's just, you know, it's just not there. The resume's not there. I'm not saying the league stinks or, man, these guys are bad. No, it's just, and when you compare it to where it needs to be, not enough W's. So I think it's pretty simple for NC State and Clemson and Syracuse and Notre Dame next week. I think the marching orders are crystal clear.
Get to Friday night.
You better do that, and maybe then some. And then some.
Hmm.
I mean, those net numbers that we just put up,
those aren't good enough.
Those are not good enough. I mean, no disrespect. I mean, we had teams in the 30s last year not be in. I know every year is a different deal, but those four teams next week have to be terrific, all four of them. We'll see. Then you got to also hope, as we said yesterday, that some of these other conferences don't provide a out-of-nowhere winner that takes a bit. But that's
American, A-10, West Coast.
There's a bunch. Head on swivel, like I said. You got to watch all these games and all these scores and keep an eye on who wins these tournaments.
Some of that deal out in Vegas.
There's a lot out in Vegas.
Yeah, there is.
About four or five tournaments in Vegas.
Corner in Vegas.
Yep.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.